Welcome to Hot Air, the DC Breezes podcast. My name is Greg Esser. I've got no time up front today, so I want to get through this quick. I've got a lengthy interview on tap, a dense interview on tap with Tyler Byram, the DC Breeze staff writer. So let me quick thank our sponsors right out of the gate here. Papa John's Pizza, The Big Board, MedStar Sports Medicine, Port City Brewing, Oak Creek Apparel, Layout Gloves, Discraft, and our community partner, Wafsy. Throw it over to Brooke Royals. Let's get this show on the road. Episode of Hot Air. This week, I am fortunate to be sitting down with Tyler Byram, staff writer for The Breeze, fellow windbag, because in addition to his skills with the pen and the ability to write, he stands in for me on one occasion at a Breeze game. He did some play-by-play. He also operates that PA. He hoists that microphone and lets everyone at Gallaudet University know what is going on in the Breeze game. Tyler, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Appreciate you having me. I mean, you can never pay me too much to talk. I'll do that for free, so that's why I'm here today.
That's a classic windbag response. I love it. This is actually, and the other fun thing, I'll be timely. Today, we've already had a little practice session for our club team, John Doe, or at least a team that's still shaking out, figuring out what its roster is going to be for the year. And today is the longest day of the year. So we just had a long session with a late sunset, and now as we go into the wee hours of the morning, here we sit, chatting more Ultimate. It's been a long evening of Ultimate.
Yeah, ultimate filled day. You can never get too much ultimate, especially in the middle of the summer.
Perfect. So a couple things on tap today. The whole division is heating up. The Eastern Division has exploded, and so we got a lot of things to talk about there. We're going to take a look at some Breeze stats. I find it challenging to talk to Breeze players about their stats. No one really wants to talk about their stats. They just want to win games. But you and I, we can talk some stats. I want to talk about New York as a pretender or a contender, and particularly about that playoff picture. Everyone thought going into the season, New York Empire were going to be one of the three, and right now their numbers don't suggest they're one of the three. And then finally, we'll end on an over-under piece, and let's get into action. What do you say?
Yeah, sure. Let's get started. Got a lot to go over. Shouldn't be too difficult today. I mean, it's pretty straightforward stuff.
Straightforward, except for the playoff picture,
yes.
Which is about as complex as it could get.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a sports fan's dream if your team is not involved.
And the Breeze are involved, although I would say it's a pretty unlikely scenario they would get knocked out of the top three altogether, not to jinx us here.
A lot of things have to happen.
A lot of things would have to happen. They're still definitely in control of their own destiny, is
yes.
I guess the terminology that would be
used. One more win.
One more win, because there are two teams with 8 wins. That's the Toronto Rush at 8-3, half game behind. It's the Breeze at 8-4. You've got the Montreal Royale sitting at 7-4, also pretty. The three teams that are outside the window are the New York Empire, 3-5, the Outlaws from Ottawa, 2-6, and the Philadelphia Phoenix at 2-8. And so the first thing I'll say, you know, what it comes down to, well, so is that going to be the final order? Do you see one of those three teams within striking distance at the top? What's your gut call on this one?
Well, New York's definitely going to make a run, but they basically have to win out in order to get it in. I mean, they have to win 6 games in a row to, in my opinion, even be in contention. I mean, they could theoretically win 5 and be in, but a lot of things have to happen for that to happen, and 6 in a row, especially ending the season with 5 on the road.
Right, a lot of road games.
Yeah.
And one of those road games, actually, I think one of the home games, the only home game is against the Royale.
Ottawa.
Okay, so they've got an Ottawa home game, they've got then 2 big road games, one against Montreal,
yep.
One against Toronto.
Yes.
And those are both must-wins if you're talking about this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, the Montreal, that game is a must-win if you're trying to get in as New York.
Because that's the team you got to knock out.
Yeah, that's the team you have to knock out. I mean, there's a long shot that they can count on the Breeze losing the final 2 games and maybe they getting it, but you can't rely on that. If you're Toronto, you got to go and you got to take care of business. And, I mean, the Breeze haven't lost a game at home yet, so you can't count that happening.
So then back to the premise here. Is that the final three teams? Is New York a contender or a pretender, to steal the industry jargon?
They'll make it interesting, but I don't think they have much of a chance.
Yeah, it's certainly a long shot. I mean, the other interesting thing is, you know, really the Rush only have three more games. The Breeze only have two more games. The Royale only have three more games. The Empire do have a lot of games to go. Ottawa also has a lot of games to play. Mm-hmm. Six more games to play.
Still mathematically alive.
You know, what do you make of that? Any chance?
Oh, for Ottawa? I don't think so. But, I mean, like, all these records are relative right now. I think the Empire are going to get a couple wins. So it's still a long ways away and a lot of things can happen, but I'm picking them for that upset over Montreal. Ottawa, they have some tough matches. I think they're going to get a couple, but, I mean, we aren't going to see the Outlaws and the Empire end the season at 2 and 3 wins, respectively. They're going to get up there, and when the season's all said and done, you might, oh, it's a competitive East Division this year, when looking at it now, probably may not be the case. If you're looking as a whole division, top three is definitely, it's a toss-up right now, so yeah. Who's going to get it.
So, okay, so disc flip. Disc flip, yeah.
Not a toss.
Although I don't know if that's 50-50 odds. I've heard that the heads-up disc maybe has a couple more extra percent.
Well, that's why you have the season series tiebreakers.
to cancel out the odds of flipping a disc?
Yeah.
So, okay, so if we've solidified that those are going to be the three teams, mm-hmm. Now it comes down to what that order looks like.
The fun part.
Yeah, and this is really important because this is who hosts those playoff games. Mm-hmm. And as you just said, you know, the Breeze haven't lost at home yet this year. Guess where they're losing? On the road. They're, what, 2-4 on the year on the road? Two and four. And that doesn't bode well if they need to start taking some trips to the Great White North come playoff time. Mm-hmm. They have a tiebreaker against Toronto, but Toronto would need to lose another game in order to enact that. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the tiebreaker against the Royale. And in order not to be in a tiebreaker situation with the Royale would need to lose a game. So in order to get a home playoff game, they need to bank on losses out of Toronto and Montreal, is the bottom line there.
Yeah.
What are, do you think that we can sit here safe and bank on that? You know, what, you know, which one of those teams do you think is more likely to drop a game down the home stretch here?
I mean, obviously if you've been following the AUDL in any capacity the past 3-4 years. Toronto's the favorite. You can't expect Toronto to go and lose. Montreal, on the other hand, Breeze have beaten them this year. Royale, they've been shaky. They got that huge upset win over Toronto earlier in the season, but other than that, they have some questionable games, some games that shouldn't have been close.
Yeah, they lost at home to the Phoenix, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're thinking the Royals going to at least lose one of their remaining three games. But in my opinion, you can't really count on that. And if when the Royal get reinforcements back from beat championships,
yeah,
they're looking Toronto square in the face, and Montreal still has a shot at that number one seed, especially if they beat Toronto, because then they have the season series over DC and Toronto. So if there's any tie, and the only thing
so
they
it was can a count nine on, a 9-4-9-4. No, sorry, it would be the 9-5-9-5-9-5 end of the division.
Yeah.
They would have the playoff. They would have the tiebreakers in all of them.
Yeah, and I believe so. I don't want to know the.
Well, if they assumes that they beat the Rush yet, but yeah, I think you'd be right. Yeah.
But yeah,
so that'd be a big game. So we would know, you know. So we need Montreal as a Breeze fan to get the loss against New York in their matchup that remains, which happens, I think this very upcoming weekend, just a day away when you listen to this podcast. But how would you root in the Toronto Royale game? That's seemingly the hard question as a fan. If you're tuning into that other game, conflicted interests, where do you fall on that?
Well, that one's definitely interesting. Now, it's a weekend away. It's not this weekend, so you don't have to commit yet if you're a Breeze fan. You can wait and see if DC gets the win this weekend, because if they get the win, then obviously you can be like, okay, let's root for Montreal to get that win over Toronto.
Yeah.
If Breeze lose this weekend, you almost have to go straight up. We need the Montreal to lose, because there's essentially if Montreal beats Toronto, there's basically no shot of DC getting it, because you would have to count on Montreal losing their last two games.
Right.
Which probably isn't likely, and then you have to win against a team that at this point you would be 0-2. Again, this is a bunch of hypotheticals.
Yeah.
And then on
this is spiraling out of control. My head is spinning here.
Yeah, players hate this hypothetical talk.
So let's not talk about the things the Breeze can't control anymore. how confident are you for the Breeze going into two games against Philly? You know, right now the Breeze are 0-1 against the Phoenix this year. Do those games scare you as a fan?
I don't think so, because as a fan, you've never seen them lose at home.
Hmm.
And that's going to be one thing, especially if you look, I mean, you can't look past Philadelphia, and that's one thing that the players always say, you can't look past an opponent, and with Philadelphia being the only opponent the past 2 weeks, I think they're going to take care of business. There's nothing.
Are there any players on Philadelphia that scare you? That might make these late game pushes?
Nicky, of course.
Yeah. Although, so the thing I was perusing down the Phoenix, particularly their O line this year, they throw away a lot of discs. Mm-hmm.
A lot like Ottawa.
Yeah, they have
talent, but they just can't always put it together.
And they take their shots early and often. You know, you gotta hope that D-line's going to take a bunch away and force them to get a little trigger-happy. I don't know if I'm really that scared by the Philly O-line right now, just because they've got a completion percentage hovering around 85%.
But the one thing is they're a dangerous team in the fact that they're never out of it with the talent. They also have Marquez Brownlee.
A guy with a 79% completion percentage.
Another Esser.
They do have Matt Esser as well. Not an O-line player, though.
Yeah, not an O-line player, and Marquez isn't really an O-line player either. Sometimes he gets shuffled in.
He's been kind of mixing lines, I think, a little bit this year.
But their O-line wasn't stellar in the Breeze win that they had either.
Yeah.
They just nickel and dime, stayed in the game, didn't let DC pull away, and then before you knew it, the only lead Philadelphia had was the final minute of the game.
Yeah. There was, I think, some complacency in the middle of that game. And I think that's what the Breeze will need to avoid. They certainly can't have that lull towards the middle of the game again if they're planning on pulling out a pair against Philly late in this 2017 season.
Which the one good thing that the Breeze do have going for them is that I don't think you'll get that complacency with you losing to this team already. And as I mentioned, you play Philadelphia twice. And the next game after these two Philadelphia matchups is end of July. So they'll have a long, and you don't know who the opponent is yet.
Yeah.
So you can't look that far ahead.
And the one plug I'll give here on Hot Air is, so as you listen to this, make sure you come out this Saturday to Hotchkiss Field. At Gallaudet University. That's where that next game will go down. It happens at 6:30. It's June 24th, 6:30 p.m. Join us out there. It's been insane crowds recently.
Could be the home finale, right? Time you see the Breeze this season at Gallaudet University.
That's a great point, and it is the last time. It could be the last time. I don't know what the Breeze plans are for the continuation of the $5 to $1,000 mannequin challenge hit. But if you want a chance at that too, we'll see you at Gallaudet. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's all the chatter about who's going to make what, and if that, then this. Let's talk about the things that we know definitively from the past, and that's a recap of this past weekend where the Breeze went on a doubleheader road trip to Canada, their only one of the year, and that was against first Montreal on Saturday, and then this past Sunday they played Ottawa. You wrote a great article that's up on the website. I mentioned your writing skills. Check out that article at thedcbreeze.com. And you can read, you know, you get into more statistics and stuff like that. But give me your general, the feels. Tell me about, you know, the pace of the game and, you know, I guess what happened to the Breeze on Saturday particularly, because that was a loss.
Based on what you said, there's two articles. There's the recap, which is the basic recap of the weekend, talk about key players of each game. And then there's a weekly piece, stat analysis is what we have decided to call it. And I think that's the one that you're referring to, and that's what a lot of other people have talk to me about.
Stat heads.
Yeah. And basically it's just a bunch of...
You got your Breeze head, stat heads. Classic. Yeah.
But I stressed in that game how it goes to... The entire season could have finished on one point in that Montreal game.
Yeah.
And because the reason why Montreal has the tiebreaker over the Breeze is not because they win in head-to-head. It's tied at 1-1.
Right. They've only played each other twice.
But Montreal won by 4. DC only won by 3. And Montreal scored that fourth goal with 5.7 seconds left on the clock. They had 5.7
seconds. When you close your eyes right now, do you see the number 5.7?
I do now. The conversations I've had, I didn't when I finished the piece, but since then, it's 5.7 keeps coming up because that's not even a full stall.
Yeah.
So, But yeah.
So they put up the Hail Mary at the end of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, walk me through the play.
Yeah. I'll just, so Rowan was pulling, DC just scored, bring it within three, which is huge because at three, that means we're tied on the season series.
And then it would go to, I think, point differential in general, which the Breeze are looking pretty.
Yeah, I believe so. Not 100% on that, but right now I think the Breeze are like plus 34 and Montreal's like plus 2.
If that were the scenario, obviously we'd write Commissioner Gordon a letter and he would respond kindly. We'd find out all the details, but it's not the case because what went down?
Well, so Rowan was pulling and he pulled the disc in. In my opinion, I don't know if it looked like it was planned, but it looked like it went out of bounds and it looked like the Breeze were going to set up a trap on the sideline. Now, 5.7 seconds, disc gets pulled out of bounds. The clock doesn't start until the throw goes off. Unlike if you pull it inbounds, once someone touches the disc, the clock starts rolling.
That's some deep AUDL strategery.
Yes. I mean, it's one of those things that you see it rarely, but it's just like for teams trying to come back, they'll fake that big pull and then just drop it on the ground.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things that you just have to think through and you have to think through as a player. I think you really need that disc to go in bounds.
Yeah.
You can't pull it out of bounds. And that's one thing that happened. So it goes out of bounds, 5.7 seconds.
So Montreal's got the disc on the sideline now.
Yes, about 50 yards from their end zone. It just passed half field, didn't go full field. And
so also not pinning in a corner. Tough time to have, you know, not a perfect pull.
It's a throw that any pro player could complete 80 times out of 100, or 85 times out of 100.
Yeah, yeah.
Fairly easily. Especially given the conditions, because unlike Sunday, it wasn't that windy. I wasn't there, but that's from what I've been told. They set up the double team, and then it looks like, I don't remember who quite was on the double team. They cut off that dump throw, and then the person who was at the front of the mark, protecting their own goal, wasn't exactly flat enough. They were kind of protecting that inside. They were maybe thinking maybe Montreal wants to get one throw off before they huck it.
Yeah.
But instead, they just went for the huck right away. And by the mark not being flat, it allows that huck to go off, floats to the end zone. Both Breeze players are trailing their man, and it was Cantone and Marshall. Cantone makes a fantastic athletic play. He reads the disc perfectly. He knows exactly his body length. He's kind of like me, how he has ridiculously long arms.
And yeah, you're a knuckle dragger?
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that mean something? I don't know. Maybe that's some old term from the coal mines or something. But like anyway, like kind of gorilla-esque.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to describe it. Cantone goes up. He makes a defensive play where the disc was just outside of the end zone, maybe a yard, half a yard, and then he D's it away from one Montreal player, but then it floats right into the hands of a Montreal player 5 yards.
So the truncated version of the story is a pool that was not very deep, allowed them to be on the sideline and throw one throw before the clock started. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, Breeze defender Chuck Cantone still had the first touch on it.
Makes the play.
Still flutters into the hand of an awaiting Montreal Royale player. They get the fourth point and now have the tiebreaker on the season that if the two are tied in fourth place, somehow, I don't even know if that's mathematically possible for New York to pass both of them. But anyhow, Breeze would be left at home.
Well, Montreal lose out, DC lose out,
and if
New York wins out. New York's 9-5, DC's 8-6.
Okay, Montreal, so then that's very possible.
It's very possible.
So tied in fourth, Breeze stay home now. Tied in third, I think the most likely scenario based on our dialogue so far, Breeze have to take that 10-12-hour bus ride up to Montreal, which is really a 24-hour bus ride because you're going both ways. Mm-hmm. That 5.7 seconds cost the Breeze potentially 24 hours on a bus.
Yeah. And one thing I alluded to, it wasn't just that one point, and that's one thing I wanted to stress, is that you can't hinge an entire season on one point. You can't hinge this entire scenario on that one point.
That sounded dramatic, though, when I said it. You're taking that away from me. Yeah. I feel like I delivered that well.
But it's just, as a player, especially, you have to think about it, it's just, now it'll be in the back of your head. It's just, maybe if that one drop disc or that one bad throw to the end zone, or I didn't lay out for that D.
Right, they had all game to score the extra point.
Yeah, they had all game to score the extra point. They had all the entire game on May 20th at Hotchkiss Field to score that point.
Oh, the home game.
Which I'll even talk about that a little bit, because the only reason why I'm talking about this is because DC lost by four instead of three. If it was by three, it would be an entire different scenario.
Right.
But in that game, DC had the disc for the final time, up by 3 points, got the disc within 20 yards of the end zone, and it took six throws before Montreal got a layout D with the disc going backwards. And they almost scored on that, but if DC was able to punch it in there, then we'd be even.
They'd be even. They wouldn't need a fifth point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So something that could have happened way back in May 20th, and if you want to go back and look at the game film, see if someone had dropped a disc, someone made a really bad throw, someone didn't lay out when they should have, someone made a bad read. It all hinges on that. I hope the players aren't thinking too much into it.
Baseball always likes to advertise itself as like the game of inches. Mm-hmm. I feel like we need to come up with a moniker for Ultimate. It's the game of...
Game of points?
Well, I mean, that's... Yeah,
you can't take off a point. That's what I'm saying. You can't take off a point.
These point differentials are huge when there's only 14 games in a season.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe a game of seconds. I don't know if that... Nanoseconds. Fractions of a second. I don't know if those really have the same appeal to me. But we'll work on it, obviously.
We'll figure something out.
Well, yeah, give me a whiteboard.
Work in progress.
That is a lot of drama from that game. Mm-hmm. And the thing I'll say, and your articles touch on this as well, is the Breeze were traveling without a full array of their cutters. So they were in a rough spot to try to win that game to begin with. They tried out some new O-line cutters. They ended up crossing over guys from D-line to try to make it happen. Once you're crossing over D guys, now you got a shorthanded D-line. And I think that's also part of the reason they ended up in such a tough bind at the end of the game. Certainly they were still, had done enough to maybe bring back the point differential. And it was a combination of very close factors and plays that resulted in that. But they weren't in a great position to win just by the personnel they had and the crossovers that they were forced to make. They were in for a rough ride.
Yeah, and one thing to just think about when you're looking at all this is they were missing a ton of key offensive players, not so much from the defense, but it forced some of the defensive guys to play.
They had no Tyler Monroe. Matt Kerrigan's still out of the picture, obviously. Mm-hmm. Although he would suit up the next day.
Yeah.
Maybe partially because they saw they really needed some more downfield offensive-minded cutters. Kolek wasn't there.
Schaffner wasn't there.
And Schaffner wasn't there. That's a great point.
Which can play, but he can play both ways.
That's right. So yeah, that put them in a bind. I've also heard that the Breeze have been, have been playing with some more dynamic offensive options to kind of give, hey, their defense has a lot of looks. We know that. Let's give their offense some different looks as well. And trying to execute some of those new maneuvers, maybe without their standby core of downfield cutters, maybe was part of the challenge as well.
Yeah. And when the entire O-line is together, they have been dominant this year, especially once Nathan Pryor has come up and he's getting regular touches on the O-line. They barely turn the disc over. I believe the O-line, when they have everyone, is 80-85% success rate of not even turning over the disc and scoring. But it's just a matter of everyone needs to be there. And especially on road games and a Montreal game, players weren't there, but you can't make that be an excuse. Because for Montreal, they were missing players too.
Yeah.
They didn't have all their weapons as well, and you have to get that win. And it didn't happen.
So let's go over to the brighter issue. We've deliberated here. It was a tough loss. It can be... made up for. We can account for this. There's still games to be played, as we've discussed. Montreal still needs to win a heck of a lot to make their point differential count. But the Sunday game was brighter. Some adjustments were made. They changed away from that more dynamic offense. After talking to Coach Stanley, they went back to some of the basics. And they did really well. And the D-line was a big part of it, too. The offensive line was cruising, but also the D-line was outstanding. Bloodgood had a heck of a weekend on defensive line. Troy Holland, who hasn't gotten a lot of play time this year, he's been kind of in and out with some leg issues. The injury bug bit him just a little bit, just enough to kind of stay off the field or be tentative. He had a weekend.
He only played two games coming to this weekend, and he doubled that by his performance this weekend. So, and maybe get more playing time in the future.
Well, in your mind, what went right then in the Ottawa game?
Yeah, well, just the defense forced turnovers, and it wasn't that hard. The conditions were ridiculously windy. The storm blew in early on, and it just kind of saturated the field. And I mean, when you're playing and you know it's wet.
And it's a grass field up there in Ottawa, too.
You know it's going to be a rough day. And Ottawa had 60 turnovers for the entire game. Now, DC had their handful as well. But the difference is DC capitalized on Ottawa turnovers. And you can say that especially about the defense. Also speak a little bit to the offense. The offense wasn't that successful at having a strong conversion rate in the beginning, but they always managed to get the disc back, which is huge. And that's one thing that a lot of people talk about once you build your team, is that having a strong offense that can play defense and having a good defense that can play good offense.
Yeah.
And in Ottawa, we saw that clearly. I mean, and all you have to do is look at the scoreboard and you know that it was a good game all around for everybody. Even though there were a ton of turnovers, even though some people didn't have their best games as a whole team, it just it looked like they were probably just upset they lost to Montreal in the way that they did.
Yeah, one thing I would say about, I mean, certainly there were tons of throwaways from Ottawa, seemingly unforced, but it was a particularly tough setup for Ottawa because Breeze was rotating their defensive looks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They played a lot of the 3-2-3 zone that they have really deployed effectively this year and deployed it erratically enough so you don't know it's coming. And in addition to that, Ottawa left functioning without their kind of every other handler guy, Kinley Guy, over in France playing at Beach Worlds. He's a real important part to making that offense work against the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the odds stacked against an Outlaws team that ended up having a rough day.
Yeah.
Great. I think that's to catch you up on where we are in the season. We got through the recap of the East and those two recent games. What has happened kind of with the personnel for the Breeze so far this year? I don't get to talk about this enough either because I'm talking to players themselves. I'm learning about their backstories. Any standouts that you saw coming this year? Any new players, rookies on the Breeze, but also any players that you're surprised by now you didn't see coming? On the top assists, top goals, and top blocks lists.
Well, in the beginning, I think the big surprise for everyone was Tyler Monroe. I mean,
yeah.
Everyone knew he was a solid player. He played well, but I don't think people really expect him to explode like he did.
And now he's got 37 assists.
Yes, he has 37 assists, and that's only because teams are shutting down his goal scoring. I think he's a natural goal scorer.
Yeah.
And it's just teams are forcing him under, so he doesn't have that deep option. It's a weird thing, because I played against Tyler Monroe. He's not that fast, he's not that big, but he's like the perfect size, has the right amount of speed, and he just knows how to go and get the disc.
He's 9 out of 10 in every category.
It's one of those things you can't teach. Yeah, exactly. He's that one guy in backyard football that you created him yourself, and that's what you get. And another thing, the reason why his assists are so high, his eyes light up every time he sees a deep shot, and he has his hands. And you know he's going to take that shot, and again, 9 times out of 10, he's most likely going to complete it, because
yeah,
he has a good arsenal of throws as well.
Right. So he's a guy, would you say you saw Tyler Monroe coming, or you were surprised too to see him up at 37?
At the beginning of the season, when he had that breakout game against Toronto, I don't want to say I saw it coming. I won't even admit I saw it coming. But then once I sat down and I thought about it, I was just like, okay, it makes sense. I mean, he's played pro for quite a while for being a young guy, and he's had a huge college season coming into that point.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys, this was the first time, maybe a month, of playing organized ultimate competitively.
Yeah.
Since last club season. So Monroe's been on the grind since August. He didn't really have an off season. And with him playing in college, it was actually probably a huge benefit for him. I don't want to say he was in shape and no one else was, but he was already ready to go. And I mean, he's done a great job. I mean, he willed George Washington to a huge regionals performance this year, where they were a game away from going to nationals.
That's right.
And I don't want to take any credit away from the rest of the team, but Tyler Monroe he balled out. He played fantastic, just like he does for the Breeze.
One of the guys on these top lists that surprised me and had a great weekend, I already mentioned him once on this podcast, but I'll mention him again, is David Bloodgood. He's mm-hmm. second in blocks right now, sitting at 13. No one on the Breeze has an absurd number of blocks at that point, but 13 is solid. It's more than one a game. Bloodgood's a guy that's played a lot in Philly. He's played a lot for Daryl Stanley mm-hmm. in the past, and I think partially, Stanley's putting him in the right position. He's playing a lot of points. He's playing a lot of games. I think he's one of the two players that hasn't missed a game yet in 2017. But also, he's putting himself, I mean, he's doing it himself, too. I'm not taking the credit away from this guy. You know, every year, I've seen him, as I said, I've seen him play in Philly, and he's played for high-level teams in Philly. But maybe the cliche in sports is the, you know, switch towns, the new environment, excelling even more and making leaps and bounds this year. being a solid D-line handler, and you don't think of the D-line handler maybe as the guy getting all the blocks.
Yeah.
But he's getting all the blocks.
Yeah, and it's kind of come out of nowhere because it hasn't been a regular thing for him to get blocks. He kind of had to get into a groove a little bit. But the past couple weeks, he's just been playing great, I believe, in... Oh, it was the last home game.
Toronto.
Last home, yeah, Toronto. Bloodgood had 3 blocks against Toronto.
Yeah.
And he's just been running those in week after week for these past several weeks. And it's good to have this, especially on the defensive line. And in a situation where when your O-line guys are out, your backups are your guys on D-line. And Bloodgood's one of those guys that you can count on to go and get the disc and also be a reliable defensive handler. Because it's one thing to go and play defense, and then once you get that turn saying, okay, now you guys need to calm down and score.
Yeah.
You had to flip a switch, and he's the epitome of how to do that.
That's an interesting point as well. I think that's well said. One thing that's hidden by some of our top lists that I want to quickly mention here too is there also are stats kept on, I mean, this is just easy, it's just math, right? On assists, goals, and blocks per point played. And no surprise there, assists per point played, Max Castle, O-line guy, goals per point played, Monroe, O-line guy. Blocks, however, kind of surprising because they're two guys that haven't played in a lot of games this year just because of busy, high-level ultimate schedules. And that's Cranston and Brian Marshall. Two guys, Cranston in first and just a sliver of a fraction of a point behind him is Brian Marshall. I'm going to really look forward, hopefully, to the end of the season, those guys clearing up their schedules, playing these meaningful playoff games. Those guys can rack up the blocks like anyone, and I think there's been a couple games where the Breeze haven't gotten a lot of blocks. Get those guys back in the lineup, and make those points start counting.
Yeah, if anyone's a fan or follow high, elite, or whatever you want to call it, ultimate in the D.C. area, you know that David Cranston and Brian Marshall are two of the best defenders.
That's right.
In D.C.
Sure.
And it kind of hurt them in the beginning of the season to not have them in the lineup. But now that they're coming around, and I mean, if you think you maybe plug them in that Raleigh game, plug them in that one game against Toronto on the road,
yeah,
that we could be talking different things. Again, hypothetical thing that guys who don't play on the field on Sundays get to banter about. But they're just fantastic. And if, like you said, if they can play, this is an entirely different team. When this team is fully stocked, this is a team that could contend for that championship for.
We are just burning through the clock here. If we were an AUDL game, we would only have 16 minutes left. The last thing I want to do before I make this a listenable amount of time, we're going to have a little fun here at the end. Let's do the old over-under segment. I'm going to give you a thing. You're going to tell me whether you think it's overrated, underrated. We'll find out a little bit about who Tyler Byram is. Here we go, over-under.
Okay.
It is, 'tis the season, beach ultimate, over underrated. Playing on sand.
I think it's a little underrated. I think there should be a better commitment to playing ultimate on the sand. Because it's kind of like one of those things, and you'll instantly know my opinion on this, how there are a lot of players on the men's and women's division, and this going to club a little bit, that can, you think they can go on the beach and they can be fantastic players. Beach ultimate is entirely different. It's like saying you can take an NBA player and put him on a 3-on-3 half court and he's just as dominant as he is. That's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
Things are different. And that's probably maybe the best way to allude to it, or maybe even saying, I don't want to say arena football and NFL football. That's kind of another analogy you can throw in there.
Okay.
But beach ultimate, I think, is definitely underrated. I think that it could... There was a while that I remember a couple seasons ago that beach ultimate could be the way to appeal to non-ultimate fans. Smaller, games are quicker, you still get those athletic plays.
Yeah.
And, I mean, everyone loves beach soccer, beach volleyball. Everyone loves the beach sports.
Are you going to play in any beach ultimate tournaments this summer?
I mean, I'm not missing Wildwood.
Good man. Under-overrated Hotchkiss Field. We go there so frequently. We've gone there 6 times this year to witness Breeze games. The facility itself... What are you feeling about Hotchkiss?
I'd say slightly underrated.
Underrated.
It's the perfect environment that you want. You aren't packed into the city, which I think a lot of people feel like it is when you're going to DC. You just be like, oh, it's going to be a stadium that's just
Downtown.
Yep, downtown. There's no...
There's green around it. It's green.
It's green. There's a great apartment backdrop, if you can say that's a thing, in the background.
My house being one of them.
Parking is free. It's right there. Unlike...
I used to work at a movie theater where I'd pick up the phone and say, AMC movie theaters where the parking's always free.
Yeah.
Just to, like, you know, extra little hype, but... Gallaudet University, where the parking's always free.
Yep, it's spaced out. There's a good, it's kind of like a concourse area, or just right beside the stands where you can just relax. You can have a beer from Port City Brewery, have Papa John's Pizza, and it's just nice and open. Now, I only say slightly underrated because they do not have a PA system. Of course, this is because they are a deaf university.
Nationally funded deaf school, yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. So you can't knock them on that. But it's a great facility.
If you could be on a big screen, you know, maybe, you know, signing, would you be interested in that?
What do you,
so as opposed to having a PA system, what I find phenomenal is you'd think that you would want to replace that with something. What if there were a big screen at half field so that you could announce the game visually? Would you be interested in doing a combination PA and a visual on Tyler, or would you be interested in learning American Sign Language and also broadcasting the game in that fashion?
That's what I was saying. We'd have to get some of those Gallaudet University graduates
to help you out.
To help me out.
Yeah, which is very doable.
Yeah.
They're around the scene. They see what we're doing out there.
Yeah.
And they're interested.
Mm-hmm.
I see people sitting on the hill checking it out.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is you're in on that. You're in to have your face at half field, 10 feet high.
Yeah, I'm in on having my face pretty much anywhere to broadcast it out.
Perfect. Next up, it's a game that I believe you've only been recently introduced to, and maybe introduced partially through me. I've talked about it on the podcast before, Gultimate, the half-court sibling of Ultimate Frisbee.
Yeah, Greg is a Gultimate aficionado, for those that do not know. He has all the Gultimate throws, if you will.
Mostly the blade.
But yeah, well, I mean, that's the one main throw you need.
Over underrated.
I'd say adequately rated.
That's not an option.
That's not an option.
I'm gonna get into a fight tonight. What do you got?
Oh, it's a tough one. I say it's underrated. There's a lot of things that you can get from, because I know there are a lot of people that are saying why are we playing Gultimate at practice instead of playing mini, because you don't get as much out of it. You get a whole different skill set from playing Gultimate that is relatable into the Ultimate field.
All right.
Throwing in tight spaces and knowing when to cut are two of the main ones.
Here's a guy that you've watched for a couple years now. He used to play in the defunct MLU. He's now come over to the AUDL. He's a Breezer rookie in 2017. Do you know Joe Freund?
Oh, Baby Joe? Yeah.
Baby Joe with that man face.
Yeah. Joe... He's either 19 or 20 years old, but he looks like a 35 to 40 year old man. I remember he was at tryouts at the old DC team in MLU, and everyone's like, "Oh my gosh, how's this guy not come out to tryouts yet?" And general manager comes over and he's like, "Oh guys, he's not playing this year. He's 17." And we didn't know how that was possible. We thought he was playing for Masters level Ultimate.
He's like a 6'3", 6'4", 17 year old.
Yeah. To answer your question, though, he is definitely underrated, and he's played on U24, or the youth teams. He's won a couple national championships with Swing Vote. He's playing with Truck Stop. He is up and coming.
But to be underrated, he has to kind of be unknown, and I feel like he's been getting his reps on AltiWorld. I feel like the word is out.
I don't think so. There wasn't that much noise when he signed with the Breeze.
Okay.
There wasn't that much noise, and I don't think there was that much when he was playing. There were a lot of people in the stands that were just like, "Who is this guy?" Well, he was also wearing an AJ Joukowsky jersey,
right?
Because the jersey hasn't come in yet for him. I believe he'll have it this weekend. Not 100%.
Do you know what number he's gonna wear?
He wants. I think it's 16.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
I think it's 16.
We might be seeing a 16 pop up.
Yeah. His 43 was taken, which is Joe's normal number.
Who wears 43?
I believe that's Pryor.
Okay. Wow, Pryor stealing the thunder. Yeah.
But I mean, the way Pryor's been playing this season, I mean, he's definitely earned
it. He's got the rights to it.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I mean, there's like a tradition in other sports where you make him buy you like a bottle of whiskey, but since Joe Freund's only 20, he can't meet the requirements.
Yeah.
Next up, over underrated jorts. Ultimate Frisbee players play particularly recreational tournaments in a lot of bizarre garb. Jorts is sometimes on the menu. Thoughts? Over underrated jorts. Are you a jorts man?
No, that's overrated.
Overrated?
First Wildwood experience. The team was called, I don't know if I even say this. I'll leave the team name out, but we were wearing...
Say the team name.
Unpulse with Benefits was the team name.
I think you can say that.
Which is a Wildwood team name.
That's it's just beneficial to have lots of uncles. Yeah,
and it was a wife beater shirt with jorts was the outfit. And I was like, I'll wear the wife beater, I'm not wearing the jean shorts. And I wasn't the only one.
All right, last one, and then you're out of the woods here. But it is another player, and a guy you've watched for a couple years. We've talked about him already, Lloyd Blake.
Oh, he is one of the most underappreciated players on the Breeze, in my opinion.
Yeah, huge completion percentage rate, which I'm a big fan of for sure. I think I'll agree with you.
Yeah, he doesn't turn the disc over. I mean, before Nathan Pryor, he was the most consistent guy on the team. And when you get the disc in the... I think he's gotten hand-blocked maybe twice this season, and I think that's only the two times I've ever seen him get hand-blocked in the 3-4 years I've been watching him.
Yeah.
It's
a high-level play.
He's like 6'5", so he's not going to get hand-blocked that often. But it's just, he makes the right decision. He doesn't have the best throws on the team, but he knows his limits.
Yeah.
Which is great to have an ultimate play. And, I mean, he can still throw a 60, 50-yard huck pretty accurately. Not trying to downplay his deep field game.
And he's number 3 right now in terms of assists. So even though he's conservative maybe with the disc and completing a lot of passes, he's still scoring by the bunches or throwing assists by the bunches. And then he's got 16 throwaways and 358 touches. And as much as he's in the backfield, he's still not like a give-and-go rapid handler.
No.
Those are 10-yard minimum throws for the most part.
Yeah. No, and I would love to see Joe be a give-and-go handler because... He's 6'5". He would be a great downfield target if he gets looked off and goes deep and then they huck it to him because he'll body out his man. I mean, most of his goals this year, because he does have a handful of goals as well, is him making that strike cut, and there's no one that can stop a lanky 6'5 dude into open space.
Yeah. So my number one rule of the podcast that I just invented is to make sure we cut off with time before an AUDL game will be over. AUDL games, mentioned earlier, 48 minutes long. Let's cut it off here. We've had a thorough discussion. We got through over-under. Tyler, thank you for coming on. I'll give you 1 minute if you've got something witty or funny to say, but otherwise, we're cutting it off here. Thanks for listening to Hot Air. What do you got? Anything cool?
No, that's all I got. Make sure you check out all the articles that are on DC Breeze. Make sure you come on out on Saturday, last home game of the year for the regular season. Hopefully we get that second one, but we'll wait and see, and you can only see... You're at the game on Saturday.
Thanks a lot.